and welcome to our Tshuva series. The time is short. We have the month of El to work together, so we're going to kind of jump straight into the Tshuva process. Okay, very good. The Gemara in Brachos, Hey, Amud Aleph, says, L'olam yargiz Adam yetzer tov al yetzer hara. Which means, very interestingly, literally, it means that a person should always use his Yetzer Tov to annoy his Yetzer Hara. Some of the Mefarshim actually talk about it as being yelling. The person should yell at his Yetzer Hara. But, you know, when you kind of imagine that, it seems a little comical to us to imagine such a thing. But Yargiz means to annoy, to be margiz. You know, it's exactly what you don't want your six-year-old to do to your four-year-old, to be margiz, to annoy. And to instigate. But the Gemara is telling you that this is really what a person should be doing. He should be making his Yetzer Tov annoy and upset his Yetzer Hara. Very interesting. Okay, I would like to, this context, in this Gemara in Brachos, this is a general principle, although it is written around the concept of tshuva, it's not specifically meant for, you know, in connection to tshuva. And yet, I would like to make a very, very direct connection between this Gemara and what we're trying to accomplish in this spot. Okay, let's look at the job of the Yetzer Hara when it comes to tshuva. If you think about this, the Yetzer Hara is actually very, very opposed to the concept of tshuva. In fact, tshuva is the arch enemy of the Yetzer Hara. And so we were saying that Rav Haber, who is the Mashkiach in the Or Yisrael Yeshiva in Petach Tikva, wrote a whole book about tshuva, where he says that if you want to understand the relationship between the Yetzer Hara and tshuva, it's as if it's like a cup with a hole in it. And really what the Yetzer Hara is trying to do the whole year round is to get us to accumulate sin. And it kind of works on us that it's, you know, to a certain extent successful and sometimes less successful. But then Elul comes around and tshuva is like, takes the whole cup full of averos that we have, that the Yetzer Hara has managed to accumulate over the year. And tshuva punches a hole in the cup. And then the averos come seeping out and the whole year's work of accumulating averos is all for nothing. And that's really what tshuva is about, as we're going to see soon, that tshuva is really about the erasing of sin. So if you can imagine this, the Yetzer Hara is very, very invested in clogging up the hole, meaning in getting tshuva not to work. How could you get tshuva not to work? Only if you get people to not focus on tshuva. And therefore, this concept of l'olam yargiz adam yetzer tov al yetzer hara is particularly applicable in the time of Elul and Tishrei, because really, we have to assume that our yetzer hara is going to work hard on us over this time period to get us to not do tshuva. And what's interesting is that we don't always feel that. I'm fine with tshuva. I'm okay with it. And yet you have to believe that somehow your yetzer hara is trying to eliminate or to minimize the effect of tshuva on you. And that's really going to be my first stop in this vod, is going to be the idea of getting in touch with where is my yetzer hara affecting me. Now again, for those of us who may feel that we are inspired and are, you know, focused on tshuva and you've signed up for a vod on tshuva, we might just have to be aware of where the pitfalls might be over this month or so. And we're stopping us. And for those of us, we're going to see a few different possibilities of where the Yetzer Hara really could be moving, working against us. And in every one of the cases of what we're going to talk about, we're going to talk about the how we're going to be margis, meaning the Yetzer Hara is trying to stop me in this way. What am I going to do to make sure that it doesn't stop me? And that's going to be the fulfillment of this Gemara in Brachos, Lo'olam Yargiz Adam Yetzer Tov al Yetzer Hara. We're going to try to make sure that my Yetzer Hara is not successful and that I maximize the tshuva process and I get the most out of it. Okay, so I'd like to give you a mashal for this, and then the nimshal is going to be the understanding of the different ways that the Yetzer Hara works against a person to stop them from doing tshuva, or to stop them from doing tshuva properly. Okay, so the mashal is as follows. Let's say somebody who loves you very, very much and is also very, very, financially, in a good position, knocks on your door, and for the purpose of the mashal, it happens on Rosh Chodesh El, and hands you a beautiful, beautiful, big gift wrapped up for you. Here, this is my gift to you. The benefactor gives it to you, and there it is, sitting in your living room. Now, what would stop a person from opening up a beautiful gift that was given to him? And again, the Yetzer Hara has to work hard because it has to convince you not to open up this gift. It's going to sit there, you're going to know it's there, but you're not going to open it up, or you're not going to open it up properly. So what are the different possibilities of why I wouldn't open up a beautiful gift sitting available to me? So I made a list of five, and we're going to see that the first one and the last one are kind of the same. So it's really, five, but it could be also put into four categories. Let's think of the different things. And the reason why I want you to concentrate on this is because not every one of these answers will resonate by you.
Yeah.
Hello? Not every one of these answers will resonate by you, and different personality types.
I don't know. I'm very confusion over here. What access code did you put in? What access code did you put in?
Who, me? You're talking to...
2508801 instead.
Oh, this, I hear you as I'm talking.
88.
Okay. I'm sorry about the technical difficulties. So what happens is like this, that you're going to find yourself, some of these might work with the way your psyche works, and some of them don't. So I'm going to give you a list of five different possibilities, and you will recognize yourself in some of them and not recognize yourself in some of them. So please pay attention and to figure out which ones of these speak to you. So here I am sitting here on Rosh Chodesh El with this big, big gift sitting in my house, and it's for me. Why will I not open it? Number one, I don't deserve this. This couldn't be meant for me because I'm not worthy of this gift. I wasn't really expecting that person to give me a gift. In fact, I haven't been so nice to that person recently, so maybe this gift was given to the wrong address. Or maybe it's kind of given to me, but I don't really deserve it, and I'm just not going to open it. Okay, that's number one. You're probably already seeing and hearing the Nimshal, but I will give you the Nimshal for each one of these as we go along. Okay, number two. The absolute opposite. Me, a gift, I have everything I need already. Whatever's in this box, I don't really need it. I'm perfectly self-sufficient. My life has everything I have. I don't really need any gifts. So it's not even worth opening it up because I'm just not in need of anything. Number two. Number three, I keep looking at this gift, but I'm so overwhelmed and busy that I have no time to open it. So maybe after I pick up that spill on the floor and make that phone call and take care of that crying baby, maybe I'll open it later. And it sits there and sits there and sits there, and I'm so overwhelmed that I don't get a chance to open it. Number four, this looks so complicated. This gift is so tightly wrapped in such a strange way, and I don't even know if I have the tools that I need. I'm going to need a special scissors to open this. And I don't know if I'm strong enough to open this, and it's going to make a big mess if I open this. So I just can't be bothered with this right now. It's much too complicated for me. I'll just let it sit there in its wrapping. And number five is, I don't think there's actually anything in this box. It's a beautiful box with a nice bow, but it must be empty. There must not really be anything inside. Okay, so that was my creative imagination that came up with five possible reasons for why somebody would have a beautiful gift sitting there and not open them. By the way, at the end, when we come time for questions and answers, if anybody has anything that they would like to that they would like to add as a possible reason, I'm very happy to hear other possibilities.
Okay.
Let's give the nimshel. The nimshel is that that I have this thing called tshuva, and I'm not necessarily accessing it. My yitzhahara convinces me not to access it. What is my yitzhahara possibly telling me as a reason to not access? So we said number one is I don't deserve this gift. What that would mean in terms of a nimshel means my averos are so many or so bad that why would Hashem want to forgive me anyway? Tshuva is out there maybe for somebody else, but like Hashem is going to really forgive me? I'm going to be a tzaddik? I could just like kind of make myself a tzaddik after what I did yesterday? No way. And that's the I don't really deserve this gift. Certain kind of person who has like that guilty conscience, very often the very self-critical type, maybe the self-deprecating type, is quick to say, I don't think I really deserve this process of tshuva, and couldn't possibly be that Hashem wants my closeness and wants to erase my averos. Okay, number one. Number two is the absolute opposite. We said it's the person who says, I have everything I need already. Why should I open up this gift? I mean, who knows, you know, I'm kind of anything I would have, anything I need, I have, and I don't really need any gifts. So that is number two. What does that look like in a person's personality? It's another way that the Yetzer works on somebody. The opposite of that guilty conscience that says, I don't deserve it, is the absolute opposite type. And what's the thinking here? The thinking here is, this world is full of so many people who are doing crazy things and totally for distance from spirituality and Ratzon Hashem. Hashem, when he does din on the world, he's not going to look at me, the very religious Jew, and my averos. It couldn't be. It could not be. Because who's left? I mean, how many religious people are there around here? And who's left? So it couldn't be. If I look around, if I look around at the world, I must be one of those ones who doesn't really need this tshuva process. Because, come on, if someone's going to look at my level of theirs, I mean, look at what the rest of the world is doing. Look at how they dress. You know, I'm great compared to them. Look at what they say and what they do. I'm great. So that is number two. And that's the way the Yetzer Hara works on some people who will not access tshuva because of that. Okay. Very good. Now let's look at number three. Number three is I really would like to access this tshuva, but I'm just too busy. I'm too busy, and I wish I could do tshuva, but I'm the mother of small children, or I'm working hard getting my kids back to school. I always say the biggest irony of Elul is that it coincides with September, where most people are back to work, back to school, back to something new, which is very, very distracting. And these are people who really would love to open up that package, but there's just no time, and they feel very bad about that. The Mesilas Hashem, Ramchal and Mesilas Hashem says that one of the ways of the Yetzirah is to convince a person, is to avoid, make a person so busy in his life that he has absolutely no time to do tshuva. And that's really what he's trying to do. So so this is number three. And I think for many busy women, distraction and overwhelmedness and busyness is definitely a tshuva deterrent. And if any of you are feeling guilty about that, don't worry, because we're going to answer the Yetzirah's answer to every one of these things. You're entitled to be busy. And don't let that work against you. Okay. So let's think about what else. What's number four? Number four, we said, is this package is so tightly wrapped that it must be very, very complicated to open it. And it's very interesting. The Rav Aver, the Mashgiach who I mentioned earlier from Petah Tikva, he says that many people don't do tshuva properly because they think that tshuva is very, very complicated. And it's interesting because we're going to see soon that it's a mitzvah which is actually supposed to be pretty easy. And yet many of us are confused which aspects of tshuva are do I, must I do, which, how do I do all of them properly, can I do it about all Averos, do I have to do it about all Averos, if I commit the Avero again, does it mean that my tshuva wasn't good? And it just seems like such a complicated thing. So that is the fourth way the Yetzer Hara works on us. It works on us by telling us that tshuva seems very, very complicated. And that's really about more like halachic knowledge and awareness of exactly what tshuva is, which aspects of it are actually pretty easy, and not getting bogged down by the details and therefore being unable to do this. Okay, so that's number four. And number five, we said, is maybe there's nothing in this box. Okay? And nothing in this box is really gets down to a question of emunah. And again, like I said, for some of you, some of this will resonate, and for some of it will not resonate. But for some people, there's a little bit of doubt in their head: does tshuva really work? Meaning, is it really possible to do something and then just kind of have it erased because you feel bad about it? And come on, I did something. How could it possibly be that this could be erased? And it's a lack of emunah in the process of tshuva. Okay? So this is number five, meaning not thinking that there's anything really in the box. And that's really what we're talking about here. So we've basically done the five possible ways that the Yetzer Hara will try to get in our way in terms of focusing properly on tshuva. And like I said, one or two of them might resonate by you, the others might not. The ones that to me seem to be so completely opposite are number one and number two. Because number one is saying, I'm so bad, I don't deserve tshuva. And number two is saying, I'm so good, I don't need tshuva. So you're going to see very different people on the way their minds work with justifying. I happen to think that number three, distraction, is the most common for women. I give a tremendous amount of credit to people who even were able to make the hour to listen to Avad. Most of us are just so, so busy in our lives that tshuva is difficult for us. And I want to say in context of that thing, of the distractions, that Rav Volba Zatzal, he said in Ali Shur, he said that the interesting thing about tshuva is that tshuva is a mitzvah which isn't really bound so much by time. It's bound by time in a bigger sense that we have these 40 days right now. But it's not like a shofar where you hear. It's not tangible. It doesn't have to be done by chatzos. And therefore, for many, many people, tshuva gets lost. And he says many people are running to do mitzvos that are tangible, like you might be thinking right about how you're going to build your sukkah or how you're going to like make enough food for the three-day yantif, because those are tangible things that we can focus on. And the problem with tshuva is that because it's kind of like floating out there over 40 days, find some time for this and do this with no real anchor in something tangible and some kind of time, that's why for many, many people, not just for busy women, but for many, many people, tshuva doesn't get done. And therefore, Rav Volba recommends that in terms of distraction, I'm going to, when we go into the distraction piece further, I'm going to give you a whole way of thinking about it that I think is very woman appropriate. We're going to get to that soon. But just to give you a little bit of another idea to run with, Rav Volba says that the way you can make sure that you do tshuva is by anchoring yourself in tshuva, meaning that you have to be able to make a time. Now, I won't say that you have to be able to, because we're going to learn that for busy women, you can catch little bits of tshuva even when you're very, very busy. But if you happen to be the kind of person who has a lifestyle right now that you can anchor tshuva in a certain time, in a certain place, it's very, very helpful. Rav Volba recommends taking a notebook and sitting in some quiet place, maybe under a tree or something, a few times a week. You know, that's again, said to men and said to single male students, very, very different for us. If we even get it done once or twice over the month, we might be lucky. But the idea being a place, you know, if you're on your way to work, to maybe leave a few minutes early so that you can catch a few quiet minutes. Or if you're picking somebody up from school, you might want to get there and sit on a bench or sit in your car 5-10 minutes early, meaning some place to really sit and focus. And that's very, very helpful. I think I told this story possibly last year in my Tshuva Vadim, but many years ago, I was teaching this idea of anchoring tshuva in like something tangible in a place and a time. And I said this idea of possibly sitting under a tree with a notebook in the seminary where I teach in Michala. And I walked into the teacher's room a few days later, and I hear one Rav saying to another Rav, you know, it's very interesting, but I've been walking around campus recently, and like there are so many people, like every tree is taken by a girl sitting with a notebook under a tree. I wonder what that's all about. And I started laughing that, you know, people took me very literally. It doesn't have to be under a tree, and it doesn't have to be a notebook, but very often by anchoring it in something practical, as some kind of set time that we kind of set aside, it could be very, very helpful. But I know that for many of you busy women, even that is not realistic, and therefore we're going to get to a whole way of approaching tshuva that is not even really necessary to anchor time. It will be always as helpful, but not necessary. Okay, let's get to the list, because we just gave 5 different possibilities, and we said la'olam yargiz yetzer tov al yetzer hara. So we need to be able to figure out how to answer, how the yetzer tov is going to answer the yetzer hara. Okay, so let's go to the very first one. And the very first one is, I'm not deserving. And again, I said that I think that many women feel so guilty, you know, even if it's like, you know, you do something wrong and it's in El Ol and you say, ugh, how could I be do tshuva if I did this? Or you mess up somewhere. And again, it's the Yetzer Hara's derech to want you to mess up. That's what it's trying to do. So you're going to find yourself in these situations. Okay, so let's go to the very, very first one. How could I do something bad and then with words and thoughts be forgiven? How could this all work? And if you think about it, I really like to put, you know, for the mashal, number 1 and number 5 are 2 totally different categories. Number 1 is I don't deserve this present, so I'm not going to open it up. I feel guilty about it. I don't know why this person sent me this. And number 5 is, oh, there must be nothing inside. But for the nimshal purposes, 1 and 5 go together. I'll tell you why. Because when a person says, I don't really deserve tshuva, why should Hashem want to forgive me? In a certain sense, there's a certain lack of emunah in tshuva. Because tshuva is not something that Hashem allows some people to do and doesn't allow other people to do. We all know that there are certain very, very famous stories of people who were big sinners in the Gemara who did tshuva and came out being tzaddikim. So to say I don't deserve this is in a sense saying I don't really believe in this process. So there's a certain merging, although it could be coming either from a certain kind of low self-esteem or from a certain doubting of the process, but basically once you understand the process, you understand that you are deserving. And therefore 1 and 5 kind of go together. And I really would like to deal with that a little bit for now. Okay, how could this work? And how could I do something bad and then with words and thoughts be forgiven? Why should I be considered a tzaddik just because I was thinking and feeling bad and said vidui about something? Why should that work for me? And the truth is, this is not such a crazy thought to think. It's not only coming from us and our critical, low self-esteem. Because the Gemara in Yerushalmi Makos, Daf Zayin Amud Aleph, the Gemara says, Shalu l'chacham chotei ma'oncho. That chachma, intellect, chachma was asked, what's the punishment for a chote, for a person who sins? And the answer that chachma gave is chataim tirdof ra, that there's really nothing to do. If a person sins, he's in a process where he will be punished and that it will lead to more bad. You know, sin is bad and the results are bad and that's it. It kind of perpetuates itself. Teaches us that the intellect doesn't really recognize tshuva as an obvious option. because if I did something bad, if I hurt somebody, and again, tshuva is about things as terrible of eros, like really hurting somebody, or really, really damaging somebody physically, emotionally, and a person can do tshuva, or doing a terrible avera, even klepe shemayim, before the zara, terrible things, a person can do tshuva. So Chachma is saying, what are you talking about? If you did something bad, you did something bad, sorry, you can't really correct it. And tshuva is saying, no, you can, you really can. What we learn from this Gemara, Makos, is that it makes sense to think that tshuva doesn't work, because cognitively, intellectually, it doesn't make so much sense. Rav Haver points out in his Sefer that there's another very interesting reason why we really doubt this process of tshuva, why we don't really, really trust it. He says, very, very fascinatingly, that it's not in our gears to dyankusa. What does that mean? It's not in our mother's milk. It's not something that we were taught in kindergarten. Meaning, when a child, let's say you're talking about a child growing up in a religious home, and the child is of age where they can be taught not to slip on a light on Shabbos. The child slips on a light on Shabbos. So the first thing the mother might say back is, oh, we're not allowed to do that on Shabbos. And then the child, let's say, goes on and does it anyway. So depending on the parenting technique and, how people work, some people might just scold the child. Some people might say, never do that again. Some people might punish the child, whatever they might choose to do. They might even just look away because they think that's a better way. Whatever they do. One option that usually is not chosen is what Rav Haver says, Efshar v'tzarich limchok et ha'avera. It's possible and it should be that a person should erase his avera. Meaning, l'chora, and there's many parenting reasons why we don't do this. I'll get to that in a minute. But l'chora, a person should be saying to the child, you did an avera. Now, if you are sorry about it and if you feel bad about it, then Hashem will forgive you for this avera. It will be forgotten. It's as if you didn't turn on the light. As a parent and as a person who thinks sometimes about the psychological factors in children, there are probably many reasons why we don't do this. To make a child have to say, okay, do you feel guilty? Now say that you feel guilty, and the avera will be forgiven. There's many, for a certain kind of child, it could create a complex of guilt. For another kind of child, it's, oh, this is so easy, I can do whatever I want, and just say sorry, and it'll be great. So there's many parenting reasons why we don't do this. But Rav Haver said that what we lose in the process is that we don't really teach our children, and therefore we ourselves, as grown children, don't really learn that averus can be erased. And like I said, I'm not recommending that we start this process with our children. Although in certain situations, at a certain age, with when a person's careful about it, a child can understand that. But it probably would not be healthy and good for parenting in many reasons to do this, so we don't have to do this. When a child gets old enough, they're taught about the tshuva process. But it's not in our mother's milk. We didn't grow up with it. And interestingly enough, there's one category where we do grow up with it, and that's a category where we have an easier time, and that is in interpersonal mitzvot, ben adam l'chavero. Because a kindergarten teacher, very often, if a child hit another child or took something from another child, the teacher very often will say, Shlomo, can you please go over to Yaakov and say you're sorry and return the toy, whatever that is. And then after, if Shlomo is willing to say you're sorry, which, by the way, I think 95% of children will not walk over and say they're sorry. That's a different problem. But if he were, then the teacher would smile and say, okay, now you can sit down. Everything's good. So we do have a sense as adults growing up that if I wronged my neighbor and I write them an apology letter or I call them and express a sincere apology, there will be an erasing of that event. That is something that kind of fits with our psyche because it is something that we grew up with. You do something wrong to somebody, you apologize, and you hopefully can start a clean slate with them if they're not bearing grudges. And if they bear grudges, it's more their fault. But if you sincerely feel bad and you articulate it, you're usually in a good place. That is interpersonally. But between ourselves and God, it's a little more complicated. And therefore, we're a little weak with believing that I can do an avera, and it will be erased if I do tshuva. And this is part of this process that we have where we say, how could this work, and I don't really deserve this. Okay. How are we going to be margiz the Yetzer Hara about this? What are we going to say to the Yetzer Hara, which is telling me, oh, this process cannot work, it doesn't make sense? Why should you be forgiven? Why should that be erased? Just because you're feeling bad and you're saying a few words, that's erased? Come on, you've done damage. What is this? Or you, with all of your averus, that's, you know, you're going to do tshuva? So how are we going to be margiz, the Yetzer Tov over the Yetzer Hara? What are we going to say? Okay. So here, we're going to get to something very interesting. I'm going to give a basic idea and another little idea. Okay. In order for us to have an answer to the Yetzer Hara, we have to understand certain fundamentals of tshuva, of what tshuva really is. Why would this work, that if I did something bad, I can erase it? And why would Hashem even want to make it easy for me to erase it? Because there's a very, very basic principle in Machshava, which is Chok HaTov L'Hativ, that the way of the good, and we're talking about the capital good, meaning Hashem, is to give good, is to be mative, is to be a benefactor. Meaning that Hashem's way in the world is that He wants to make things good for us. And that is Hashem's ultimate desire, is to be a mative, is to make things good, is to be good to us. We all know the basic idea that the Ramchal talks about, and it's written in other places as well, that we all know that Hashem would have wanted to give you good on a silver platter, give you a wonderful life. But in order for you to get schar, to get real reward for the things that you do in this world, there has to be some tension around those things. Meaning, if I have no options and I'm like a malach, malachim do not get rewards that human beings get, because malachim don't have a yetzahara, malachim don't have choice, they don't have bad options, right? So for me, who Hashem loved very, very much, He wanted to really, really, I mean, on a deeper level, He wanted me to enjoy the pleasure of my choices and the pleasure of accomplishment. But even on a more basic level, He needed me to be able to get tzar. He needed me to be able to choose good over bad, and then He can really, really reward me because of the fact that I've chosen. And the whole, this is not a shiur on Bechira. If we could, we would go into it much more deeply. But the basic idea is that the whole reason why Ra, bad, has to exist is in order to be, to create tension with good, in order for me to highlight my choice of good. And therefore, really, the creation of Ra, of bad, is really for my good, because Hashem needs it to be there as an option so that when I choose good over bad, He can really, really reward me for my choices. So this system of bad and bad choices and averos and Ra is really in the world only in order to magnify my good and give me schar, give me more reward. Now, what's the problem? The problem is that once Hashem created this track called bad, there's two tracks. There's this track called good and a track called bad. Now, even though the track of bad is really there for my good, the problem is that some people get stuck on that track and it messes them up. And then Hashem has a problem, because He created Ra in order for me to be Bocher Tov, to choose good. But here I am getting stuck in the bad. Uh-oh, what now? If the whole thing was done for my good, then it's pretty sad to see somebody get stuck in the plan that was really made for their good, and that plan leads to their downfall. So therefore, Hashem has this one path, this one road called good, this one road called bad. But on the bad road, there's going to be an escape route called tshuva to reconnect me to good. Why does this make sense? I chose the bad. I should be punished. What is this tshuva thing? Why is it there? It's there because Hashem really wanted me. He only wanted my good in the first place. The bad is only there for my good, and therefore, if I got stuck in His plan, He wants me to be able to reconnect to good. So there's an escape route called tshuva, which allows me to reconnect to good, even though I've been on the bad path. Now, when you understand that on a deep level, then you understand you have an answer to the Yetzirah. The Yetzirah is saying to you, oh, come on, why should Hashem forgive you? Why should he erase your averos? Why should you be deserving of tshuva? What's the Yetzer Tov's answer? Hashem really wants me to do good in the first place. The bad is only there for my good. And therefore, if I'm getting messed up by the plan, he wants to give me the option. Now, again, it's pretty tricky. He can't force me back onto the good path, because then the whole plan, you know, the whole idea is bechira, is choice. But he can make it easier for me. I just have to say, uh-oh, I'm on the wrong path, choose the new path, reconnect, take the escape route. But that's what he really wants me to do. So he's going to create a system which is going to work, because really he wanted me on the good path in the first place. And therefore he wants to allow me to get off. It's not like you're on the highway and there are no exits and you have to keep going on the bad route. There are exits here, and those exits are called tshuva. And Hashem wants you to be able to take them, and then you can reconnect. Phew, got back on the right road. Wasn't stuck. And I think that when the Yetzer Tov says this to the Yetzer Hara, then anything that Hashem is doing to allow me to get back onto the good path makes a lot of sense. Because in his ultimate plan, bad was not really supposed to be the choice that I was supposed to be taking. And that plan was set up for my good. And if it's now a stumbling block to me, he wants to allow me to choose to get back, and then he'll kind of make it easy for me. And that's the concept that the Torah says, Ki karov alecha davar ma'od, that really tshuva is close to us. Why is it close to us? Because Hashem wants you to take the escape route. He wants you to, and he's giving that. He puts a big, clear sign up there. You still have to make the turn and get back onto it, and get onto that escape route. But he clearly is making a sign saying, here it is, escape route, tshuva, please take it. That's what he wants. And therefore it makes sense. You're right, I was on a bad road, I made mistakes, but he's allowing me to correct those mistakes and get onto the good road again. I was trying to think of a mashal for this, and maybe somebody out there can help me with this. You know, it's like if the bad was really all created for my good in any way, but that bad is messing me up, then Hashem is going to allow me to move away. And I was thinking, this might sound like a silly mashal, I couldn't think of a better one, maybe somebody has a better one for me. Imagine if you planned a beautiful party for somebody and you dim the lights in order to make a special ambiance. Maybe you have like the head table really lit up nicely, or maybe bechlal, you're keeping the lights dim. But really the whole purpose is for the good. It's for the ambiance. And if for this mashal, it might make sense that it's like, you know, the lights are dim because you're supposed to get to the main room, which is really very well lit, so it's all kind of accentuating. But the dim lights were there as part of the ambiance. They're there in order to create something good. And then, unfortunately, the guest, or maybe the guest of honor, is tripping in the dim lights. Uh-oh. I put these lights, I dimmed them kind of for the good of the guests. But now the guests can't find their things. They're tripping. Or they can't find their pocketbook. Or they lost their key. So then Hashem allows for those lights to be turned back on. Because the whole purpose of the dimming of the lights was in order to create a night, it was to get to the right place. And here, if it's messing me up, Hashem will allow me. He doesn't need me to be in the dim lights. He would allow me to find my keys. So that was the best mashal I could think of, but I'm sure there are much better ones. Okay. Soon I'm going to take questions. But that's the major answer that the Yetzer Tov has to the Yetzer Hara, is Hashem wants me to do this. It's not about my being deserving. It's about the fact that he wanted me to be on the good path anyway, and he just is giving me an escape route. He lights it up really well, and he wants me to take it. So stop analyzing myself and my worthiness, because this tshuva process is for anybody, and surely it's for me as well. Okay. Number two is a more simple idea, but the basic idea here is that we say that the same Hashem who created the averos that I was nechshel in also created tshuva to correct it. So to say that something is incorrectable, if I ate something that wasn't kosher and it wasn't good for my neshama, but that same Hashem who decided that this food, for whatever reason, is not kosher, also decided that tshuva erases that process. So it's like the pesha asar or pesha hirtir. It's undoing. It's the undoing of something that Hashem created anyway. Okay. I'll tell you what our homework is for today. And we're going to have to go a little bit further into this. okay. I think that really what our purpose is right now is a little bit of a prerequisite, because we're going to go much more into the details of actually how to use Elul well next week. But the first thing I would like us to start doing is to figure out, where is my Yetzer Hara in this process? Where do I recognize myself in the five options, which we said are really kind of, you know, one in five could be put together? What's my thought process vis-a-vis tshuva? Do I have a guilty conscience and feel I'm not deserving? Am I kind of a little bit less fair about it because I feel like the whole world is, like, you know, messing up and I'm lucky because I'm good compared to many other people? Am I incredibly distracted and that's my problem, that I just can't access tshuva because life is so overwhelming? Is it that I don't really understand the process of tshuva and it seems so complicated to me? Or number five, is it that really my emuna, I don't really believe in this process so well? And like I said, that connects to number one. Okay, I want to give you a little bit of a sneak preview, because as much as this homework is what I planned for today, it's more contemplative and less practical. And I feel that in Elul we really need a practical focus as well. So let me give you a little bit of a practical focus for Elul. So the first thing, part of the homework, is really to just contemplate what do I think about tshuva? But as a practical focus for the month, Rav Tzvi Meir Zilberberg, the Tzaddik of Yerushalayim, gives a certain etzah, which I think is very, very beautiful. And again, he's talking to single men who are very, very intensely involved in Avodas Hashem, and he gives this etzah. So clearly, it's applicable for us. What I mean is, it's not a cop-out. You know, sometimes you hear certain pieces of advice and you say, oh, that must be, you know, kind of the minimalistic way of doing tshuva. But the context that he said it in is not, and yet I think it's very, 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 very practical for us. He says that a person should be marked of himself, should create a habit in Elul, that whenever you're doing a mitzvah or overcoming some yitzhara, meaning you wanted to yell at somebody and you didn't, you wanted to say Lashon Hara and you stopped yourself, you know, whatever that might be, a person should verbalize, even mentally, to himself in his own head. And this is his lashon. Kavanati lasot b'zeh nachat ruach l'avinu shebashamayim. My purpose here is to make Hashem happy. Because as we go further in this process of tshuva, we're going to learn that tshuva is really about closeness to Hashem. And therefore, even the busiest lady who's doing mitzvahs anyway, you could be changing a child's diaper, or you could be saying a bracha that you were going to say anyway, or doing something that you would do anyway, you know, serving dinner to your husband, or smiling at somebody on the street, or being nice to a neighbor. You grab onto the mitzvah and you inject it with the power of Elul. Because you're saying, Hashem, with this mitzvah, I want to make you happy. And I think it's a very, very beautiful way to kind of overcome. It's kind of really the answer of the Yetzer Tov to number three. When we said that overwhelmness, like, I don't have time for tshuva, I'm running around, you know, so busy that I just don't have time for tshuva. The answer is, well, I'm going to take all those little actions that I do over the day. And we as women, most of the actions that we do are mitzvot, the people that we're taking care of, the people that we're smiling at, the people whose laundry we're doing and we're cooking for it, etc. It's just a matter of infusing it with Elul content. Hashem, with this action, I want to make you happy. And there you take a mitzvah, which anyway you're getting schar for, but might have a more mundane flavor to it, and you're connecting yourself to the power of tshuva and Elul. You're opening up that gift that you have no time to open up, because the little actions that you're doing, and Rav Tzvi Meir recommends to even say it to yourself in your head, even a few times a day when you're doing a mitzvah, to tell yourself this, that Hashem, my intention right now is that this mitzvah should make you happy, and therefore bring me closer to you. And I think that's really the antidote to the busy lady. For the busy lady. And it's the antidote to that overwhelmness and the, oh, come on, me, Elul, what are we talking about? And it allows me really to connect to the Koach HaYom. So the homework for today was, one, to think about, you know, the obstacles, the Yetzer Hara vis-a-vis tshuva, where do you see yourself? and B, on a practical level, to get used to directing actions and mitzvahs that we do, whether it's a holding back and not doing an avera, or it's an actual mitzvah that I'm doing, and to say to myself, my purpose here is to make Hashem happy and to become close to Him through this action. Okay, I'm very happy.